Bryinger. I'm an alcoholic. I use the last name because within the confines of the program, we're supposed to, it's not a violation of the 11th tradition. Do so. At the level of press, radio, and film, you're not supposed to use your last name. In the program, you're supposed to use your last name so that people can find you. If you come to Manhattan, you will find me in the phone book. If you need me to do something, we all hide from each other. It's very difficult to carry out the primary purpose, trying to deliver the message. I don't invent that kind of thing. That doesn't come from me. I'm not that clever, and I'm not that smart. I'm not that experienced with the program. I get that from program-approved literature. Dr. Bob and the good old-timers, page 264. It's supposed to use your last name and not violate the 11th tradition. I came into AA. I was not going to do 4 or 9. That was out. Whatever you were doing, it's fine. I'll stand over there, and I'll observe, and we'll talk about that later. That didn't work, that plan. 5 years, I found myself engaging in some of the same thoughts and patterns of behavior that I had engaged in after 25 years of degenerate living in the gutter, alcoholism. I used to live under the bridge at 39th Street, under the FDR Drive. I don't live there anymore. That is because of AA. That is not because of me. Again, I'm not that good. I'm not that smart. I'm not that tough. And I'm not that clever. That was something that was given to me by the program. And those are those things that you get, gifts that come directly from the program. I drank from 11 to 36, 25 years straight through. I don't like to do the whole drunkalogue because I think it's a waste of time. I'm not here. I don't go to meetings to entertain. I don't think the stories are funny. I've been doing this for 23 years. Lost its magic. The reason is we all have the same story. I did not believe that in the beginning. I believed my story was unique, that I was different, that I was separate, that I was apart. That's not true. I've been to enough meetings to realize that each one of us, no matter who it is, what the date is, where they're from, have the same story each time. Male, female, black, white, Catholic, Muslim, makes no difference. It is exactly the same story. It starts the same, it continues the same, and usually ends the same. More often than not, in the current day, it ends in death. My main sponsor, Frank Mauser, used to be head archivist at General Services, said to me one day that for every 10,000 people who need to be in AA tonight, one gets in. Every 1,000 makes it in, one gets to a year. 100 who make it to a year, one gets to 10 years. Everybody else is dead. And that certainly is my experience during the time that I've been in the program. Whether I went to meetings in Maine, Florida, Georgia, California, Illinois, New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, same thing. And the reason is because I believe that we go to meetings and entertain. Nobody knows what the message is. Nobody knows what's happening. Program. It's a fight to get people to do the fourth step. To the point where, for the most part, I won't sponsor people anymore unless we're going to do 5. Well, they ask me in the city, you know, I want you to sponsor me because they hear that, you know, that sort of program role that we get on. I want to do it afterwards. And I'm fine, you know. For somebody who's a newcomer, I'm not talking about someone who's starting today. I'm talking about people who've been around for 15 and 18 and 20 years. Never done it. If you want to do it, call me when you're ready to do 5. Zooms, you've done 4. If you haven't done it, don't call me. I don't want to be involved. I don't want to go through this. I am not here to enable you to continue to not do the program work. Because I am tired, exhausted by the effort of trying to enable people to be involved in the program, then having to wind up at their funeral, at their wake, involved in Westchester County with the DSS and the kids being taken off to foster care. I don't want to do it anymore. What I'd rather do is be involved with sponsees who work the program, who used to live on the street next to me, who are now working at jobs, who have lives and wives and children and careers. Most important thing that they do, most important thing that I can do is to live and carry the message. I didn't know, couldn't find out, couldn't discover what that message was for a long time. Finally, it dawned on me it was that there was a choice. For the 25 years that I drank, I had no choice. I never believed I had a choice. I never understood that it was a choice. I thought I had a drink every day. So, by the time I was 16, got myself in trouble, first time seriously, high school, and I was suspended for drinking. Nothing unique. The next day after that episode, I swore to God Almighty that if I got out of that, I would never again have another drink. And like anybody else in this room, when you make that statement, you're not lying. I meant it. I really did. And when it happened, next day, I was drunk again. How can that happen? How can that possibly be? And then I got drunk when I was 18, and I wound up in the Army, and I got drunk, and I wound up in South Vietnam, and on and on and on. And I got drunk again, and I was on patrol. And of course, the water was gone from the canteen. That was Johnny Walker Red. And I was sitting in a tree and took a round in the shoulder. And I was in a field hospital and got fixed up and said, look, here's the deal. If I get out of this, I will never again have a drink. And I meant that too, and it wasn't lying. They patched me up and put me back up online, and 2 weeks later I was drunk. AA is not about stopping drinking. Who cares? You want to stop drinking? I stopped drinking literally thousands of times over 25 years. It's about starting. How can you possibly start? Armed with all the information and all the knowledge about being an alcoholic, how can I possibly start drinking? Yet I can. And what I think is the most revealing aspect of the first step is that if I don't do it the program way, I, after 23 years, will walk out of here tonight and go have a drink. Armed with all the information and all the experience and all the sponsees and all the rehabs and all the jail work, et cetera, I can walk right out of here and go do that. The most important realization is that I do not have a choice about that. It is an ego-inflating proposition to think that I have enough control over my own life or my own alcoholism that I can prevent that from happening. I can't do anything about that. I will drink again, left to my own device, unless I do it the program way, have the spiritual experience. Later on, it's the 10th step. It says, in the big book, one of the lines is towards the end, all we are given is a daily reprieve, and it is contingent on the maintenance of the spiritual condition. That's it. That's all it is. And that's all we get. And it's one after another. No one is 23 years away from having a drink. 23 minutes. Start jerking around and not be in fit spiritual condition. And I'll go do that, absolutely. I don't have a choice. I don't get to make that decision. That's the important part. First step that has to be realized. It will happen. I don't care if you go to 50 rehabs. It doesn't make what difference, what medication you're taking, who is your sponsor, what your circumstances are. It makes no difference whatsoever. Want to go to Hazleton? Go there every day for 50 years. You'll drink again. How many times have we all seen it? And the reason is because we don't have a choice with respect to those things occurring in AA. We don't get that. The earth people get that. We don't get that. It'll happen. So I think that's the critical element of the first step. We have to make the admission, being powerless. Mission has to be that I have to understand that as an alcoholic, I will drink again, left to my own devices. Something has to intercede. The bottom of the B part of that section after chapter 5, nothing human could relieve our alcoholism. There's nothing human that can do it. I did, in the 25 years that I drank, every single experiment that you can do that I could invent to stop drinking. Diet, exercise, changed religion, moved, got married, got divorced, went to school, bought a car, got rid of the car, car was repoed, makes no difference. Went swimming, got up on sunny days, got rid of the job, moved back to Manhattan. All the experiments. The heroin experiment, the marijuana experiment, the LSD experiment, there was a medication experiment. Keep going. Diet. I had self-hypnosis tapes. I actually paid some maniac once to hypnotize me. I got drunk the next afternoon. Every experiment I came up with, I woke up on occasion with notes written to myself. Don't drink today. I did the counting experiment and woke up one morning on the sidewalk on Maiden Lane in Manhattan with a handful of stirrers. I was able to hold on to them, but I wasn't able to stop the drinking. So what can explain this? As an alcoholic, no explanation is needed. That's the fact. Who we are, where we are. That's where we're going to go. That's what happens. That's what we do. That's who we are. Can't escape that. Can't get away from it. I don't care where you go. And we've all seen it. Go to the Arctic, the Antarctic, makes no difference. If you're an alcoholic, you'll find a booze somewhere. So, I mean, that was that B part, nothing human. And what Frankie used to say to me was, look at the examples of when you tried to stop drinking when you were drinking? And what's the one part? What's the theme through each one of them? And I couldn't put it together. Until finally he had me start reading that chapter 5, and at the end, nothing human. Every one of those experiments, every one of those exercises was something that was human. And it made sense. Well, that's why it was doomed to failure. That's why it couldn't work. It was a human enterprise. It was something that a human had invented. Stop the drinking, and it wasn't going to stop. If it's human, it's not going to stop. I'm not anti-rehab, not anti-detox. I think they're perfectly good, but they don't solve the problem. It's a good intro on how to get to AA. How many people have I met who went to detox, the rehab, and all learning about the program stopped the day we left? The guy's got 10 years in AA, and he's talking about his month in Hazleton. He allegedly learned the third tradition. That was in, what? 2001. What are you talking about? What's going on for 10 years? Problem is, in the modern age, not much. We don't do in the modern age what was done in the old days. Back to Dr. Bob and the good old-timers, page 292. 92% of the people they got near got sober. 92. You know what it is now? Less than one. One. And that's because message is not delivered. It's not carried. People don't get it. Rehab, I got it. I went to the rehab. The meeting that he and I go to on Monday nights, 130 people every single Monday night. And of that 130, at least 25 to 30 are brand new. First day. Just out of the rehab. And every single week, different. It's a different set of people. Every week. But the question, where the hell are they going? Where do they go? It's Manhattan. I mean, there's a lot of meetings here, but I mean, you would expect to see some of them. None. Zero. I see none. They're gone. Back to the rehab. Probably back to the, probably straight to the morgue. That's the reality of it. I chose not to do that because I knew the next stop for me was eating a bullet. I just couldn't do it anymore. I had kids and wives and bills and trouble and problems. How was I going to fix this? And how are you going to tell me how to do it? How was I going to get the money? I needed the car. I needed a house. I needed nothing. Frankie said to me one day, I was being evicted from an apartment in sobriety. He said to me, you want to fix that problem? And I said, yes, of course. And I figured he's got 10 grand or something. And he said, do the fourth step today. Finish it by 6 o'clock. I'll meet you at the meeting. And he was right. He was absolutely right. No, it didn't solve, the immediate problem, but that problem will never be again be repeated. And I won't let my life devolve into circumstances where those things can arise and can occur. This particular meeting, primary purpose, follows the format that used to be AA in the mid-50s with the four meetings. I don't know if it's done on purpose. I don't know if it's inadvertent. It makes no difference. During that period of time, if we're lucky enough to wind up in Dr. Bob's rehab. We were there for 3 days. And in 3 days, you did all 12 steps. Dr. Bob, he did all 12 steps with 5,000 people for over the 15 years that he practiced from 35 to 1950. All 12, 3 days. I talked to people that have been around 15 years. They're not up to three yet. And they live what I call the shoelace theory of existence. They wait. Then one day, she doesn't call back. Then one day, they don't get the raise. Then one day, the sun doesn't shine. And then they're gone. And in Manhattan, it's real quick. It's the apartment's gone, the job is gone, she's gone, the life is gone, he's gone. In an hour, Marshall's there. I mean, it's just very quick. And then, you don't see them. Where's Bob? I don't know. Gone. Another one, gone. So you did all 12 steps in 3 days. And then when you got out of the Dr. Bob's rehab, you went to one of the groups in Akron, went to four beginner meetings with your sponsor. Who's the sponsor? People come up to me in Manhattan, they say, well, be my sponsor. Well, I'm being interviewed to be your sponsor? What do you want to say, to 1040? What would you like? When AA was founded, and for the first 20-some-odd years, what they did was, every group went out to every rehab, every hospital, every jail they could find, and they spoke, and they told people about their alcoholism. If you came up to that person, who expressed an interest on any level, be sober, to be an AA, that's your sponsee. When he gets out, you go get him, bring him to the meeting. Now, they had a table, there's a well-defined format. You put a table in the middle, Bonsie sat around the table. Bonsoir sat right behind them. And that's how they did it. 4 weeks, you did 3 steps each of those nights. And those, you were still not in AA. It wasn't until you had done each of those 4 weeks, then you went to your first AA meeting. Imagine the audacity of these people to engage at this level of ego deflation. They would not allow someone like me to go to an AA meeting. They were right. Whatever they did it right. Whatever they did, it worked. And that's why I always go back to it. What doing it my way didn't work. Doing it my way got me to wake up on the sidewalk. People stepping over me at 7 o'clock in the morning. My way didn't work, but their way did work. We got away from it. Here we are. 1%. This group obviously is not of that type of group. But Tom and I were talking before, there are groups in Manhattan. You can't recognize it as being a meeting. Surely you can't, you wouldn't know it's AA. And that's okay. But when I came in Westchester County, there were two guys I met, Hugh McGinley and Herbie Foote. They were Guadalcanal Marines. And what they would do, they were sat in the back, it was like Statler and Hilton from the Muppets. They sat in the back, and they would say, when somebody was off the topic, when somebody was rambling, when somebody was not on the step, excuse me, Tim, it's obvious you don't know the seventh step. Have a seat. George, why don't you step up there and finish the rest of the meeting? And people's egos were crushed. But that there was a result there. Number one, it would never be repeated, because people didn't want to do that. But number two, at some point, people realized, you know, I got to start learning what's going on. And when I don't do that, aren't I really just, if you're in a ramble, aren't I really just enabling you to ramble? If I don't stop you and say, listen, this is ridiculous. I've been around for 20 years in AA. You have no idea what you're talking about. Say that to me. You have no idea what you're talking about. I was in a discussion with somebody like this about this kind of thing today. He's got 23. We're talking about a friend of his at 18 who probably couldn't put 16 months together. Nothing wrong with the guy. He just won't do the work. Nothing wrong with any alcohol. Just got to do the work. Got to get through the ego. Got to get to that point where I can make the spiritual connection. So when in those days, when they did it in that fashion, they had a cure rate or an effective rate or a rate that was 92%. And one of the things they did was they, in a first step meeting, was ask a question. Are you willing to admit to your innermost self that you are in fact an alcoholic? Simple question. If your answer is yes, you just took the first step. Those days, what they did is, if your answer was no, they okay, come with me. And they would go outside. Talk about being powerless over the alcohol. And that was it. That's all you had to do. Second step. Came to the meetings. I came to, and then I woke up. And then I came to believe. There was what? Something greater than me? That's pretty simple. Yes, though I didn't think of it at the time. I was the center of the universe. I was the one who had problems. What problems would you possibly have? Combat veteran. What do you know? Possibly know about being in combat. You don't know those things. You have no standing to tell me. It's an absolute nonsense. It was just a defense mechanism used to keep everybody away from myself so that I could continue with my insanity over in the corner. That's all it was. All it was. And we had to get through that. So the second step question then was, are you willing to concede? Are you willing to believe that there is a possibility of a power greater than yourself? Yes, said I. Second step, you just took it. Third step, say the third step for prayer. You've taken the third step. Make the decision. Turn it over. If I communicate with God on a regular basis, whatever form, if I can make that contact, then I am in the position, I've made the decision, to let Him make the choices about the way things are supposed to be. And the reality of the third step is to do all the work on a problem. Pray as if everything depends on God. Work as if everything depends on us, because it does. But with the application to a specific problem, convicted, as Frank would say to me, God, no. Maybe you want to consider the idea of getting a job before you undertake long-term debt. Not a bad idea. But I hadn't done that. If you take all the action with respect to a particular problem, then whatever the result is, it's the way it's supposed to be. And from there on in, I was held to this yardstick of my behavior, which I really didn't want to hear. There was a men's group I used to go to, and God help you if you came in there and started in about me or my problems, my life, because you weren't allowed to do that. What you were allowed to do is you were allowed to come in and talk about what action you had taken since the last meeting last Wednesday night respect to that problem in those 7 days. That's what we're allowed to do. But to come in and reiterate week after week after week, my problems, these are my issues. I want to hear myself talk. I'm the center of the universe. They were not going to enable me. They didn't. And my feelings were irrelevant. I was outraged. How can this be? A man of my standing, living under the FDR Drive, a man in my own mind, a man of my standing. How can this be? My feelings were totally irrelevant, they would say. And the only thing that was important was the action. And I had every family court problem and issue, and IRS issue, and DMV issue, and cops, and courts, and collections, on and on and on. And how am I ever going to pay this back? And somebody said, dollar at a time. That was another one of those problems that how is this possibly going to be? How is this possibly going to get fixed? And over time, it all gets fixed. And over time, I got better. Over time, I'm not living under the bridge anymore. And more importantly, is the way I feel on a regular basis. What is it like to get up in the morning, have a cup of coffee in peace, paper, with the bills paid? Kids are okay. In fact, the kids are fabulous. Not know that the next knock is the marshal. Know that it's not the marshal. To pick up the phone and it's not been turned off. I still get a kick out of, after 23 years of going in the refrigerator, opening the door and there's food. And I still get a kick out of coming down the hallway and I hit the apartment and I turn on the lights and they go on. I mean, it's the small things, but from my world, it's a big deal. This is really terrific. It's really great to be out here. It really is. I was here, I think it was 2 years ago. It's really terrific to be back. It's good to see everybody. Thanks very much.